Holland and Chris Pratt have already worked together as pals of the Avengers, and now they provide the voices of two elves in Disney Pixar's latest film, Onward.
These two elves are brothers, and they go on a classic quest to find a magic jewel. They just need a van, a map, and their mom. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about the charming animated film Onward on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Stephen in the studio is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And in our fourth chair, we are always happy to welcome NPR Books editor Petra Mayer. Hey, Petra.
Howdy. Happy to be here.
I'm so happy to see you. I have to say, I didn't feel like I was hearing all that much about Onward leading up to it. I didn't feel like it was getting the usual giant Pixar push. Mm-hmm. But I found myself, as I said in the intro, quite charmed by it. Glenn, what did you think?
Oh, man, the first 20 minutes or so of this film had me profoundly worried. I was getting some very kind of cheesy, broad Disney Channel vibes from the family dynamic, from the high school setting. And I thought Chris Pratt and Tom Holland were just kind of hitting their marks. Then the mom would bust out a catchphrase, and I'd be like, we are circling the Yoda Ant drain here. Which is, this is not DreamWorks, but it's DreamWorks adjacent.
She is voiced by Julia Louis-Dreyfus, by the way.
She certainly is. It is not until a point in the film where the characters reach a certain restaurant that I started to relax.
Yes.
At that moment, and that was almost entirely a function of the truly expressive and very funny character animation. There's a character called the Manticore, who is voiced by Octavia Spencer, and it is so expressive and fast and funny, and I was picking up a definite Looney Tunes vibe. Then as the character relationships got deeper, I started to like it more. There's another scene set at a chasm where you laugh purely from the expressiveness of the animation. And just, I want to give a point to the story here. From a story perspective, this thing does what screenplays should do, which is plant seeds that come back at the climax. And that's hugely important because climaxes are always where this kind of film just falls apart. Mm-hmm. It's always big spectacle tied to nothing. The emotional stakes are embedded into the climax in a very smart way. And the callbacks work in a way that kind of falls into place. Now, I am me, so the fact that the climax was not content with the fact that it was working on a narrative level and decided that it needed to not just pluck the emotional heartstrings, but saw away at them like it was guar. That I take off a few points for that. But it's still a better than average Pixar. It is certainly not Toy Story or Inside Out, but it is also not Good Dinosaur. And parents, within the sound of my voice, this thing must and should blow Sonic the Hedgehog out the damn water. It just deserves to. So, yes, liked it.
All right, Petra, what did you think about this film?
You know, you mentioned The Good Dinosaur, and I feel like we need some kind of taxonomy or spectrum of how much Pixar movies are going to make you cry. Because everything I had heard about this coming into it was, oh, God, it's a four hanky, bring your tissues.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And I cry at commercials, so just let's establish that about me.
Yeah.
And I kind of sniffled a little at the end. And I was intrigued to hear how other people reacted to it because I wasn't sure if that was just because I am not the demographic. I mean, I'm a giant nerd. So there were lots of things in the film that resonated with me, but the whole lost your dad brotherly dynamics thing. Mm-hmm. I'm an only child who won the dad lottery. My dad is still very present in my life. So I wasn't sure if it was me or the film that it left me a little bit flat. And interestingly, Glenn mentioned the way that it planted seeds. I read that as being more like, oh, it's a little predictable because this is happening. Now you know what's going to happen at the end.
Sure.
So that being said, it certainly hit all the happy notes for this giant nerd. I mean, last time I was here, we talked about the bad aspects of fan service, but I thought that especially in the production design, Onward was really about the good aspects of fan service. The way that, you know, the skyscrapers had crenellations and everything looked like a medieval times and the brand names and the bumper stickers and the fact that, like, you pass by the Shire Burger and it's got a sign that says now serving second breakfast. And I was like, aha, yes, love it. So I thought it was charming. It fell a little bit flat for me and I was sad. I wanted it to really pull me in more than it did, but it's not bad.
Yeah. We should mention, if this sounds a little bit confusing, it is elves, but they're very much living what you would think of as a contemporary American suburban or urban life. They have contemporary looking buildings and restaurants and things like that. But they're all elves and ogres and I don't know if there's
manticores.
Ogres,
yeah, manticores and mermaids and pixies.
Like that. So it's like it's fantasy, but also contemporary. And I think part of what Patrick's talking about in terms of fan service that I thought was a lot of fun is it really dives into, particularly with the Chris Pratt character, who's the older brother. He is a real devotee of kind of fantasy card games quest. You know, you have to take the path of peril. And I mean, that kind of stuff is very dear to him as a they mention at one point he's in his gap year, so he's kind of done with high school-aged kid. Stephen, I could pretend that I don't know whether this movie worked on you emotionally, but I was sitting next to you.
Oh, now. As Pop Culture Happy Hour's weeping correspondent, I'm often reduced to a puddle by particularly Pixar movies. You know, movies like Coco and Inside Out absolutely destroyed me. While I did weep nobly at spots where I was supposed to, I wasn't completely flattened by this movie the way I was kind of expecting to, especially when you're led into it with things like, if you have lost a parent, it will ping a certain part of you. If you have a strong relationship with a sibling, it will ping a part of you. I have lost a parent and have a close relationship with a sibling, but I wasn't leveled by it the way I might have been. I did, however, enjoy it enormously. I had the same issue, I think, that Glenn did with the first 20 or so minutes, and I think it rescues itself really nicely, starting with some of the world building. The little detail that, like, unicorns are raccoons.
Oh, God, the trash unicorns. Like, everybody talked about how upsetting this movie was going to be, but I tell you, the thing that upset me was the trash unicorns. They were scary. They were refugees from a different, much more richer, much more disturbing movie. Anyway, it's trash unicorns.
I agree.
I dug that. I also have to say that as a fan of doofy Chris Pratt, that was such a warm and welcome relief to have loud kind of Andy from Parks and Rec Chris Pratt kind of oafing around. Mm-hmm. I thought was really, really welcome. I do not like dour Chris Pratt, and it was nice to see him lean into that part of his persona more. And I have to say, I agree completely with Glenn that as soon as they introduce Octavia Spencer as the Manticore, the movie just achieves liftoff in a mm-hmm. way that I just found really witty, and like suddenly you realize, oh, I am in really good hands.
Right.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I didn't necessarily think it was as devastating and leveling as some of the Pixar movies are. I also didn't think it was as emotionally innovative as some of them, like, for example, Toy Story, which has such an interesting group of ideas, emotional ideas about separation and growing up. What I did think was that it was very funny and fun to look at. And the same way that I was sort of giving Stephen a hard time that he was sniffling, Stephen could tell you I laughed a lot yeah. during this movie. I laughed at the jokes, but more than that, I laughed at visual gags.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
When they go on this quest, they take something with them. You know, it would be the equivalent of your like little lizard or your little, it plays kind of a similar role. I thought the animation of that was so fun and funny, and it really made me laugh. There are numerous jokes when you talk about the introduction of the Manticore. There's a bunch of kind of visual stuff that goes on there, including the fact that it's the restaurant is sort of like a Chuck E. Cheese mm-hmm. type place. I cracked up over and over again just at the look of this movie. And one of the things that I sometimes miss about Pixar movies that are really heavy and really emotional is that you lose some of that, like, that's just so fun to look at. And I did think this was very successful as a fun movie. I had the same, like, it didn't quite land emotionally, despite the fact that I really like kind of what the messaging of it is. And I like the fact that to me it was a little surprising where it was going, mm-hmm. unlike Petra.
Sorry.
No. I think that's perfectly valid, but I didn't see quite where it was going.
Right. I suspect that, for me at least, one of the reasons the emotional climax didn't hit is because you can see it doing work. You can see the tension constantly rising. They throw out another thing that's going to happen. There's a stopwatch kind of clock that you have to watch. There's something that needs to happen. And mm-hmm. you can feel that tension rising in a very story structure kind of way. That said, there are moments. I mean, again, yes, we're outfitted with all the stuff you're going to need at the climax and exactly the way it happens at a quest. But the way it's seamlessly transitioned between all those things was really, really worked well for me. I also thought just emotionally, from a story structure way, one of the challenges the main character played by Tom Holland has to face is not anything abstract. It's merging onto a highway.
Yeah.
And that was so well done. And mm-hmm. so like, yep, Yep, I know that fear. That yep. fear, mm-hmm. I had that, I have it.
it continues unabated.
It, me, yes. Yeah. It's just smartly structured, I keep coming back to.
Yeah.
Linda was talking about the visuals, and, you know, I was trying to scribble down notes, except that it was pitch black, so I can't read my handwriting. I have no idea what I actually wrote, except for animation is Meryl Streep, which I think meant that it was so ostentatiously excellent that it was kind of like watching Meryl Streep, where you go, God, she's good.
Yeah.
But just the nitty-gritty world-building granular level of how beautiful and tactile and weighty the world was, I loved. And the way, for a movie that's so intensely concerned with the way time passes across a single day, the way the light changed, it sort mm-hmm. of helped. Mm-hmm. It was like this constant background cue, oh God, we're getting close. The light's getting more golden and more long. I thought that was just a wonderful little detail.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think it's very lovingly made, which is something yeah. that I always really look for in this kind of movie. I don't want them to feel kind of churned out. And I think that we keep talking about that Octavia Spencer performance. And I really was happy to hear her having so much fun. You hear a little Lena Waithe. You hear a little, as always, John Ratzenberger.
Yep.
You do hear kind of a variety.
Yeah.
Ali Wong. You hear a variety of really cool and interesting voices. But for me, hearing Octavia Spencer get to be kind of really funny and kind of nutsy in the best way was something that I enjoyed enormously. If you get a chance to see Onward, let us know what you thought. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH.
If you went to see Sonic, you actually owe it to you have a debt.
I completely agree.
Since I had to see Sonic for this show, I concur.
I was sitting there with all those kids for Sonic and thinking, you should come back to this.
Well,
yeah. This is what you should be seeing.
And I'll say something else. It's a really breezy, fun, funny. You'll come out laughing at least some of the visuals, if nothing else. So let us know what you think. Again, facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? So come right back.
This message comes from NPR sponsor StoryPoint Vineyards, maker of StoryPoint, a new wine brand who believes that wine and storytelling are the perfect pair. Much like a good podcast, StoryPoint builds layers of interest into their wine to create a bold, velvety taste profile in every bottle. Discover why StoryPoint received Wine Enthusiast's Best Buy Award. Visit StoryPointVineyards.com/NPR to purchase. As a special offer to NPR listeners, shipping is included in your online order. This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp, the online counseling service dedicated to connecting you with a licensed counselor to help you overcome whatever stands in the way of your happiness. Fill out a questionnaire and get matched with a professional tailored to your needs. And if you aren't satisfied with your counselor, you can request a new one at any time, free of charge. Visit BetterHelp.com/happyhour to get 10% off your first month. Get the help you deserve with BetterHelp.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It is time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What is making us happy this week? Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week, buddy?
An announcement of the first album since 2006 for the Dixie Chicks. The Dixie Chicks have had a long and complicated history. One of the biggest country acts in the world in the 90s and early aughts in 2003 got swept up in a controversy about a statement singer Natalie Maines had made at a concert about George W. Bush and the Iraq War, led to boycotts and blacklisting. Eventually, the Dixie Chicks went on hiatus after the 2006 album Taking the Long Way. Each member has been involved in different projects over the years, but finally, there is a new Dixie Chicks album called Gaslighter coming out later this year. The first single is called Gaslighter. Let's actually hear a little bit of it. You're such a gaslighter. So you can hear it's country, it's pop, it's the Dixie Chicks. They are finally back, and that's what's making me happy this week.
So happy to hear them back. Thank you very much, Stephen Thompson. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
Ragnarok is a 6-episode Norwegian series that dropped on Netflix at the end of January. Here is the premise. See if you can figure out where this is going. A single mom and her two teenage sons move back to the fictional Norwegian town called Edda. That's your first hint. One son is kind of large and blonde and kind of slow-witted. He's got a thing for hammers. The other son is a darker, a little fey, kind of, I guess you'd call him a trickster. And so they go to high school, they have angst, they expose the town's dark secret, which has to do with its melting glacier, which, topical. So it was created by Adam Price, who created the series Borgen. So I was prepared for the series to be sort of somber and self-serious, and it is very, very self-serious. But because it is so angsty and self-serious, those moments, and there are many, when it gets just doofy, just dippy, just incredibly silly, kind of stand out in sharper relief, and so they totally work for me. It is the Twilight formula, as many people have pointed out, high school angst and big, silly, ham-fisted, hammer-fisted, mythological stuff, just the dippiest. Now, it has not been favorably reviewed in Norway, if that matters to you. One prominent reviewer dismissed it by saying, it seems more like a Danish series, which,
ooh, burn.
A, sick Scandinavian burn, B, not wrong, because Adam Price is Danish. One last thing, if you do choose to watch it, go, please, with the Norwegian with English subtitles, yeah. Because this is true for a lot of Netflix series. The English dubbing is terrible. Like what I just did with the seems like that, but a hate crime. It's just bigger. It's so bad. So sub, not dub, in all things, always. And that is Ragnarok on Netflix.
Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Petra Mayer, what is making you happy this week?
Generally, I'm the kind of person that only has emotional spoons for one serious TV show at a time. The rest of the time, I am watching Guy's Grocery Games or something, because I'm a Food Network junkie. But the one series that I am devoting my emotional energy to right now is The Magicians on Sci-Fi,
sure.
Which is the adaptation of the Lev Grossman trilogy, but it is so far beyond those books at this point. And it's honestly, it's better. I mean, I have a complicated relationship with that trilogy to begin with. It is doing some interesting things about, you know, what happens to the Harry Potter kind of character after he's a grown-up alone in the world with no mentorship. But the TV show is much more of an ensemble piece. It's much funnier. There are musical sequences and weird jokes, and it's grim and gritty and wrenching, and things just keep getting worse. But at the same time, it's also really funny. And it's also gorgeously queer. Mm-hmm. There's an episode called A Life in a Day, which is just one of the most emotionally resonant episodes of TV I've ever seen. And if you watch that and then you don't cry the next time you see a bowl of fruit, you are a monster. And it's just fascinating to watch, and it's always worth your time. So that's The Magicians on Sci-Fi Season 5. I think is airing now.
Thank you very much, Petra Mayer. To say that Twitter is a mixed blessing would be a great understatement. Often it is more mixed than blessing. But I recently became involved in an entirely new Twitter, and that is New York Times crossword puzzle Twitter, which is a very, very fine place to hang out. Their hashtag is #NYTXW, and they discuss basically every day the day's puzzle and particularly the stupidest things that are part of it, such as new pedometer reading, which comes out as 0000, which makes no sense because O's are not zeros. Uh-huh. That is not reasonable. You cannot do that. I apologize if I just spoiled an answer to the New York Times, a past New York Times crossword puzzle for you, but people discuss, like, that's not a real phrase. That's, no one would use that term. No one would, they refer to something recently as sciency. Mm-hmm. That is not a thing people say, that a thing is sciency.
So this is pedant Twitter.
No, but the good kind of pedant Twitter, because if you're going to be a pedant about something, you should be a pedant about the New York Times crossword puzzle and not about other normal human beings going about their day.
Yeah.
It's like a way to get your pedant energy out. Mm-hmm. And to be very picky and fussy and talk to other people who are picky and fussy about the same things. There is also New York Times Spelling Bee Twitter, which is kind of their new little letter word game. But I personally am a devotee of New York Times crossword puzzle Twitter at the hashtag NYTXW. And that is what is making me happy this week. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Stephen at I Dislike Stephen. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can find Petra at Petramatic. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. And our producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff. That's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. So thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, subscribe to our newsletter. You can find it at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here next week.
On a secret military recording, a sound so haunting, one scientist believed it could change the world.
My mind was racing as I listened to this, and I thought, this is the way.
Join NPR's Invisibilia for the first episode of our new season.